Consume a
few. You are listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
Views expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, the Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us tonight for the very, very, very first time, welcome aboard. We are delighted you are here. A couple of things you don't know about that you need to know about. So let me tell you very quickly. If you're brand new to the show, go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. There are some pretty neat things on there, things I think you'll find interesting and fun. One of the things that you'll find is our subscription link to our free weekly newsletter called the K-Files E-Zine. Comes out each weekend, and we email it to you. Now, it's totally, absolutely free, no strings attached. And you'll see the link there. It's in red. Just click on that and subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you desire to do so. And we keep your email address confidential. We don't loan that out. We don't rent it. We don't sell it. We don't let anybody have it, all right? So subscribe to the K-Files Easy. And you'll also see a link to where you can get our free weekly podcast. And also where you can join our members area. In the members area, you get every show in MP3 format. But even if you don't join the members area, you're going to be able to get one show per week in a podcast. We record all the shows, you know, the live shows, we record those and then put them one a week in a podcast. Hey, have you been watching the news? Have you been watching or reading the news on the internet? Big UFO sighting, of course, in around San Diego, I believe it was, or San Francisco. But there's another one down in Texas over the town of Stephenville, Texas. Are you familiar with that? Well, let me tell you about it. It's I know about Stephenville, Texas, because years ago I was a musician. That was the year right after they invented dirt. And I was in high school, and my high school jazz band entered a jazz festival over at Tarleton State University or Tarleton State College. And that's in Stephenville. And I did pretty good, as a matter of fact. Walked out of there with a trophy. But they had this UFO sighting, and it was big. The thing was big. Hundreds of people saw it. And now, understand, hundreds of people saw it. Several dozen people, including a pilot, a county constable, and business owners, have insisted that they saw a very large silent object with bright lights flying low and fast. And some of them reported seeing fighter jets chasing it. Now, one of the people that saw it was a pilot, and he says, you know, this thing was big. It was like about a mile wide, and I'm sorry, about a mile long and a half a mile wide. The Air Force in that area, Major Carl Lewis from the 301st Fighter Wing at the Joint Reserve Base Naval Air Station in Fort Worth, said that there were no F-16s or other aircraft from his base that were in the area that night. But he said it may have been an illusion. caused by two commercial airplanes. We'll be back on the other side of this break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with my guest, Gene Malkovich. I think you're going to find this one very intriguing. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel AllStar with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments, so click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com. And welcome back. As I said, my guest this evening is Gene Malkovich. Gene has done lots and lots of different things in his life. He's been in radio production since 1976 and has a degree in commercial art, psychology, and political science from the University of Michigan, Northern, and UCLA. He's done quite a number of very interesting kinds of jobs. For instance, he traveled with the and worked on the road with the rock band Kiss. Now, I think all of you have heard of them. At the present time, he is a professional photographer and has done extensive research into the pyramids. And he's going to share with us some very interesting statistics about the pyramids and also He's going to talk with us a little bit about what they predict for the future. Let me say to Gene, dobry vechi, dobro pozhalovat programu.
Good evening, and thank you very much for letting me be a guest on your program.
Well, I have looked forward to this. You know, we talked this afternoon, and you told me some of the things that are very mysterious about the pyramids, and I hope we can get into those this evening. Let me say to those of you who do not speak Russian, and I don't speak it well, but I simply greeted him in Russian and said, welcome to the show, welcome to the program. Извините, язык труден.
Well, your Russian's pretty good. You know, you have a Serbian accent, but that's fine.
That's because, that is because ya govorim serbsky sve.
Right. You know, my mother was from that area. But let me tell you, I had just got through doing a lecture at our cat club here in Fort Lauderdale. It was very successful. A lot of people congratulated me. I went very thorough about some of the recent findings. You might have heard of Bob Bouillard, the friend of Grant Cox. What he has done recently is he had lined up the Great Pyramid with the stars of Osiris and Orion's Belt.
Yeah.
And that dated back to 11,000 B.C., so there's a lot of controversy about how old the pyramids are and how old the Sphinx is. And
are you familiar with Dr. Robert Schock?
Yes, Dr. Robert Schock. He's the geologist.
Yep, and he's been on this show. And,
right.
You know, he's the one that rocked the world. Probably not the first one to think what he thought. But certainly the first one with such credentials to come out and say what he said, which was that the Giza Plateau, and particularly the Sphinx, predate the Egyptians by several thousand years.
Right, and I believe he showed water damage on the Sphinx.
Right.
That it wasn't wind damage or no other natural element could have caused that kind of erosion. And for that to happen, the water damage, that would have been putting it around what we call the Ice Age, or about 10,000 B.C. or so, when we had a previous global warming.
Yeah.
There's a lot of evidence of that. I don't find, just to mention a little bit, Noah's Flood. There's a great belief in Noah's Flood in Western culture. However, I've been talking to a Hindu friend of mine, and I'm trying to learn about other religions as well. And I said, was there any reference to a flood in your culture? And he says, no. He couldn't find one, and he knows the scriptures very well. And I had recently talked to another student who had done a paper on the Vedic scriptures, and he couldn't recall a world flood event either. However, the only flood event that possibly could have happened that caused that kind of damage and create those kind of changes would have been something like the Ice Age, which we date back to about 10,000 B.C.
Yeah. Now, in that general area, you do have the ancient Sumerians with the Epic of Gilgamesh and the flood story.
Right.
And then
you have
a flood story in a lot of other cultures around the world. If it's not in the Vedic, okay. But I'm not saying the flood happened. I'm saying that the story's out there pretty universally around the world.
Right. But then I'm always trying to put a sense of timing. I've been always criticized about this. I says you have to put the cart before the horse, or which way is this? So what must have happened that would lead you to believe that these structures must have been built before the Ice Age, which means there were previous civilizations that had attained a higher level or a different kind of physics or a different kind of understanding of the natural forces than we have today to make something like this with whatever tools they used at the time.
Are you familiar with Ken Klein, the filmmaker?
I've heard of him. I can't recall any.
He's been on the show, and he did a most amazing documentary. It's called the, let's see, The Pillar of Enoch is the name of it. And it's about the Great Pyramid and the Giza Plateau, but the Great Pyramid in particular. And it is the conclusion of his video that, in fact, there had to have been ancient, high-tech civilizations that built that, and that, you know, it very definitely predates the Egyptians. Now, that, of course, runs counter to what Egyptologists say.
Right. Well, I'm a big fan of Michael Cremo as well, and mm-hmm. he's the one that wrote Forbidden Archaeology, and there's a lot of evidence in all, even in California. I was just going through this ET timeline that I found, and what they were talking about is at certain, somewhere around 300,000 years ago that man first came to Earth, and there have been different changes and different civilizations that have grown and accomplished, and it seems like the cycle begins. They get to a certain point, and then some kind of catastrophe happens. Either it's natural or a doomsday thing, like possibly the war of the nuclear war that they had in the past. You've heard about those kind of stories? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
right. So they're finding more and more evidence of that. I mean, with Sodom and Gomorrah, this one, and back to the Vedic scriptures, there's a whole war. It's amazing how they align up with the Bible story where they talk about a war in space between the good and the evil, and those who lost came down to earth.
Yeah, and in the Mahabharata,
right.
there is a description of a battle and a weapon that is used. And if you take that and show it to someone, don't tell them that it is from some ancient manuscript. Just give it to them in plain English and say, what is that? They will tell you that is a thermonuclear explosion.
Right.
And
those and the scriptures go back 9,000 years, so they're talking about something that happened even before then.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that absolutely fascinating. But let me tell you some of the other things that inspired me. I've done a lot of research in civilizations and myths of different cultures. And one of perhaps the most fascinating culture that I've ever found was the Dogon tribe in
mm-hmm.
Africa. And that is the most fascinating culture. They don't have a written language, and yet they do a dance that's called the Ziggy, I believe. I had it in black and white off the History Channel one time many years ago. And what the dance, instead of dancing in a circle, they danced in like an almost kidney-shaped thing. And they were saying, well, why are you doing this? He says, well, because we're mimicking the stars. And they said, well, what is that? And I says, where did you come from? The anthropologists were asked them. And they pointed directly to the star Sirius. And the star Sirius is a binary star that the orbit, if we look at it from Earth, looks more elliptical with a little jump in it than it does a perfect circle. And they emulate this dance in every 60 years exactly in time with the orbit of the Sirius binary star. Now that's fascinating. In their culture, how they pass on their knowledge, and then they have the their master who's in the cave, and he passes it from father to son, and it's in all cave paintings right back to their beginning of time where they have their first time, and they say it was very natural. We come from the dog star. And the other tribe, I don't know, the Zulus. I had a very good friend from South Africa who was Zulu, and I asked him, I says, well, what is your story like? And where do your people come from? He says, come from the stars. And I was amazed by that. And I said, you're Zulu. Well, how is this possible? He says, well, we came from the people who before we used to think that God was on the earth. And that was normal because we eat the food that grows from the earth. We eat the animals. We hunt the animals that eat the food. And so they used to honor the earth as a god. And he says, those who came down from the stars told us to not to worship the gods in heaven because they made us. They brought us here. And from that time on, we worship the gods in the stars. So there's a lot to all of these cultures, whether it be Mayan or Inca or anything. All of them seem to retell the same kind of story.
When you began to study and research about the pyramid, did you find anything that really startled you, other than the fact that there seems to be pretty incontrovertible evidence that they do predate the Egyptians?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I kind of went about it backwards. I kind of figured out what the pyramid was, and then I tried to look for why. I was in L.A., and I was watching a travel program, and a musician that had just gone to the pyramids had looked at the hieroglyphics on the pyramids, and to him, they looked like notes. So he played those notes, and while he played them, he says, be calm, close your eyes, and I'm going to play this for you, and you're going to have a vision. And sure enough, I had that vision, and I saw what the pyramid and what the real true purpose of it was. I saw the light come from the right side, from the belt of Orion, enter the chamber where the sepulcher is. The whole room lit up. The initiate went from dark into the light and then shot out and went out to the other side towards Osiris. And I thought that was a very moving experience, considering I was just sitting there watching I can't remember his name. I think it was Paul Horn. He's associated with the Giza Pyramid Association in Arizona.
Okay.
He's one of the members there. I haven't been able to find that music again since. I remember hearing it, and it really moved me. And then I decided to say, well, what is this all about?
Well, now, let me clarify something, though.
Yeah.
When you had this vision, was it unaided? I mean, drugs, drinking, anything going on?
Right. No. I mean, in college, I've thoroughly experimented with drugs and LSD and smoking marijuana and cocaine and, you know, run the whole gamut, you know. But this experience in L.A. was just a casual evening in the afternoon, early afternoon, and it was a most amazing, enlightening experience. I'll never forget it. I wish I could find that music today or the person who did that, because if I did that, I would play that in front of my lectures, and I wouldn't have a whole lot else to say. Everybody would just get what's going on.
Let me tell you that after you and I talked, I was talking with someone else who's been a guest on this show, told him about what you said about the music, and he said, well, I'm going to tell you a story. I can't tell you this fellow's name because I don't have his permission.
Okay.
But and that's what he told me, so I don't know the guy's name. So then he said, this guy told him that if you go into the pyramid and you play a certain type of music, there are doors that will open that you don't see, that you don't know they're there. But when you play that music, they will open, and that he has done that. And they opened, he quit playing the music, they closed. And the guy I was talking with said, look, I can't tell you for sure 100% that that's the truth, but this is somebody that I know and trust and believe he's telling me the truth.
Well,
so it may be that same music.
He's really on to something there, because the pyramid itself was not just a monument to reincarnation of the god Ra. It was much more than that. I also heard that it was an observatory where you can watch stars in real time. Now that's staggering to think about, that you could watch a star that's, we takes 5 billion years or so many light years to get to us, and we can watch it in real time. That's something our scientists haven't even considered today.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-boggling, really. when you stop and think that you walk out into the yard at night and you look up and you see all those stars, you really aren't seeing them. You're seeing those stars millions and millions and millions of years ago.
You know, a lot of people have this misconception that the pyramid was some kind of power plant or energy producing device. And again, we're thinking of things in current Western technology. The pyramid is a power plant, and it does produce power, and it has a purpose in being where it is. Because not only does it cut the earth in quarters, equal weights, but it's in aligned with true north. But it also acts pretty much like a balance weight on a tire when you spin it in order to keep the earth within its orbit.
Really?
Yes. The weight of the pyramid is in direct proportion to the weight of the earth. It's built, there are so many, the angle that it's set at, it's 51.14 degrees, is instrumental in bringing in the pyramid energy, which makes the spiritual, not only the spiritual growth available, but what the kind of energy that we say that's like from Tesla was working on, it comes from the ether, for a lack of a better word. We don't know what it is. But it draws this energy, not like it's not the electrical force, but it's the force from another dimension, almost like from a zero-point energy source. And it draws this force and points it up towards the sky. And you've probably heard of Patrick Flanagan?
Yes.
Okay, Patrick Flanagan, he's associated with the Giza Foundation as well. And when he was out in L.A., he was really big on making these little pyramid structures and pyramid hats and all kinds of pyramid. He's the pyramid energy guy. And there's something in the secret of the shape and the angle of the pyramid that allows moisture from the air coming in and forces it out. That's why it's so dry and inside the pyramid, besides being in a desert. But Patrick Flanagan had put out these little rows of pyramids. They were like as big as a 3x5 card, and they were about 1 inch high, and there were a series of pyramids, and you would put a hot dog on it, and a week later the hot dog would be mummified, be totally void of moisture, and it would be hard as a rock. You ever seen that?
I have not.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's news to me. I never heard of the hot dog experiment with pyramids. We're all familiar with the stories about you can put a razor in and
it keeps it sharp. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the reasons it keeps it sharp, because the energy brings it in and it takes the moisture out and it makes it dry. It brings it in. But that's only one part of it, because from what I've researched, the hospitals have tried to use some grids of pyramids for healing, to bring in a more positive energy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you don't align it right, you get the wrong energies.
So you're trying to heal the guy, and you could actually turn him into a mummy.
A mummy. Yeah. Well, one of the big, you know, I'm not too far from Coral Castle.
Yeah.
That's right down here by Homestead, and there's somewhat of an association with Coral Castle and the pyramids, because Ed Lee Scallion built these things using that same kind of, he had the knowledge of using that energy from the ether to move these 9-ton rocks all by himself.
Gene, we are just a few seconds away from a break. I want to talk with you a little bit about Coral Castle before we go back to the pyramid. And maybe you can share with us a little bit of the, maybe a little of the secret of how he did what he did, if you know that. But we have to take this break, and when we come back, we will continue talking about the secrets of the pyramid and maybe Coral Castle too. We'll be back right after this.
said, but he never took nothing from no one. He always kept it running right on time. And he never rushed back to be some media lack. We'll find his picture on the news at night. Well, the last free man in America died. 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 But he never took nothing from no one. He always kept it running right on time. He worked hard all of his life. He loved his kids and his wife. Won't see him stand out in the welfare line. Well, the last free man in America got up to heaven, but they sent him away. St. Peter, turn him around. Say, keep your feet on the ground. They need you more back in the USA. But it never took nothing from no one. He always kept it running right on time. He worked hard all of his life. He proved it night after night. So if you need him, come on, give him a sign. Well, the last free man in America died. The last free man in America died. The last free man in America died. The last free man in America died.
We are back, and my guest is Jean Malkovich, and we're talking about the pyramids and other affiliated topics. So an affiliated topic that came up just before the break, Jean, was the Coral Castle. You know, that is a very mysterious man and a very mysterious structure.
Right. Ed Lee Scallion was like, I saw the pictures of him, and he was, I looked like a big guy compared to him. He was like 90 pounds or so and 5'5" or 5'6" or something like that. And for him to put, originally he had built these right here in Fort Lauderdale near the airport, which is now the airport. And he decided to move them, for reasons only he would know, down to Homestead, which is 80 miles south of the airport here. So even today, to move anything, you know, to move a house or a trailer or anything 80 miles from here down to Homestead is not an easy thing to do. But he was able to do it by himself. And while I was down there, I did see the pictures that they had, and they showed this, the black box with the wires that were one time attached to a windmill-like sort of thing. And it reminded me somewhat of what a Tesla-like setup, where Tesla, did you ever see the Tesla car?
I haven't seen it. Now, are you talking about the new Tesla car?
No.
The original.
The original
I haven't seen it, but I read the story.
Yeah, it's that. Well, I've been looking. I hear it's in Canada. I've been trying to trace it down, and I've traced it down as far as somewhere in our Ontario, Canada, that somebody really does still have it. And it looked like a very similar setup where he had taken the engine out and replaced it with a what looked like a windmill kind of fan with magnets and rotors and coils. And once he got that thing spinning, he had some batteries on it. What the story I heard was Tesla was very proud of the ticket he got going over the George Washington Bridge doing 90 miles an hour.
Yeah. Even the mayor of New York went for a ride in it.
Right. So that so we know that that energy is real. So Ed Lee Scallion was able to tap into that same kind of energy. And, you know, when you go down there, you have this picture of a castle, a mammoth structure. It's really, it's not as big as it looks, but I'll tell you, a 9-ton door that comes in when you first walk in there That's impressive. You're impressed right from the start. The other thing that impressed me the most out of that whole thing was he had a telescope, and the telescope was a stone structure with a hole, perfectly round hole, drilled through it. And on most clear days, if it's not cloudy, even during the day, you can see the North Star. It always points to the North Star when you stand in a certain place to look at it.
Wow.
And again, if you're ever down in Florida, it's one of the places to go. One of the things that kind of relates to that, too, is an interesting story about Disneyland. And as you know, that Ed Lee Scallion, I believe that he knew about ley lines and the energy lines of force, and he was able to use those possibly in how he moved those rocks. But Disney, when he wanted the happiest place on Earth, asked a couple of MIT scientists to help him find it. And they found it where outside of Orlando, where Disneyland is now, and what they discovered there was a gravity well, where you're actually weigh a little less than what you do, and that gives you the feeling of happiness.
Hmm.
You know?
We've got Walter Bosley is going to be on the show later this week. Uh-huh. He's been with us before. And that's one of the things that he's researching and that he's talked about. And that there are several places around the world where carousels have been built at the intersection of ley lines.
Right, of ley lines, mm-hmm. for that same similar purpose. There's also a spot not too far from where I went to school up in northern Michigan called the Mystery Spot, where gravity, you can roll a bowling ball uphill. And when you're at a certain places, you're standing, you think you're standing straight, and a few feet away from you, you're leaning, you know, maybe almost 30, 45 degrees over, and you think you're walking in a straight line. It's very, there's a couple of spots like that. There's also one out towards the Rainier Mountain in Washington. Oh, by the way, you know, I told you I camped out on a lot of sacred sites here in the United States. One of them was Mount St. Helens, not long before it blew up.
I bet you were glad you left.
Well, I didn't know it was going to happen, but while I was there, I could feel that something wasn't right about that place. Because one of my ambitions while camping and traveling was to go to all these different sacred sites and spend the night. And I went to Mount Rainier, Mount Shasta, a lot of places in Arizona. Been through all through Sedona and stuff. And at certain times of the year, certain events happen, and certain groups get together and perform some ceremonies and rituals. I don't know if you know.
Yeah.
I'm not associated with those people, but I have engaged in it just to find out what these guys are all about.
Let's go back to Egypt now and to the pyramid. Okay. And if we walk into the pyramid, you had told me that there is inside the pyramid a timeline.
Right. What the timeline begins at the base of the pyramid, and every year, every pyramid inch is 1 year. Now, what is a pyramid inch? A pyramid inch is 1/500,000,000 of the distance between the North Pole and the equator. So we have, there's a line that's from the inside the tunnel that there's two ways you can go. One, you can go down, and the other one, you can go up. And if you start going up, you get to a point. The first big declination is what they call the Christ area, the Christ triangle. And it's exactly 33 inches long, and it signifies the coming of Christ. The next one up the line, the large indication, World War One. You go up 20, 30 inches or so from that, there's another indication that indicates World War II. After that, it continues. That's up in what they call the Grand Gallery section. And as you approach the Grand Gallery section and you get to the very top of it, you're pretty close to the year 2000 or so. And at that point, it no longer ascends, but goes parallel to the Earth. And this is the time that I think that we're at today, what we may call the time of tribulation, the time of the Armageddon, like the end times. A lot of people have different names for it, but in effect, this is a time of great change, and that leads up to the King's Chamber, what they call the King's Chamber, and then it goes straight up for 1,000 years. And this is what I believe that we're leading up to in the year 2012. We're not looking at the end of the world or the comet or some great catastrophe, but more or less of a spiritual change, an evolvement, that we become concerned with things other than just fast cars.
All right. Now, you know, first, two observations. First thing is, I have to tell you that, and you know this, 2012 is a big, big subject right now. And there are all kinds of prophecies that people are laying out. Some are saying it's going to be a time of spiritual ascension. Some people are going to say, are saying that it's going to be a time of tremendous cataclysm and the end of human life as we know it, and so forth. Now, what you're saying is that that timeline indicates it's not the end of human life.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, a lot of people believe that there's the second coming. They try to put dates on it, 2012, 2016, 2037. But Nostradamus had knowledge of this, the timeline in the pyramid, and he was able to write it. He wrote a book, The Nostradamus and the Pyramids, which was written in 1678. In the original French, which I'm sure is very difficult reading. But there's a gentleman by the name of Peter Lemieux who had, I'm not sure if I'm saying that, Lemensur, L-E-M-E-S-U-R-I-E-R. Peter had done a fabulous book on Nostradamus and the prophecies, and the prophecies continue on to that. The world does not end. We keep growing. We have 1,000 years of peace, and after that, eventually we end up somewhere in the year 3,600 or 700, and we all ascend, and we all become what we're supposed to be.
Well, here's the second observation. What you just described exactly parallels what some have said is predicted in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
A second coming of Christ, and then he sets up his kingdom on this planet and reigns for 1,000 years of peace.
Well, you know, it's not just what I believe what they're talking about Christ in this sense is not just a warrior that came from the heavens that's going to resolve our problems. What I'm thinking in this line that the Christ is our own evolution of our own spiritual values of who we really are, and we rise and begin to go into a fuller consciousness, a more cosmic consciousness, if you will, about where we're at and our position in the heavens and at the stars. Because eventually, according to Nostradamus' prophecies and the prophecy in the Great Pyramid, we evolve to the point where we no longer have to reincarnate and become spirits. And after that, well, that's where we're headed in that direction. So 2012 will be the doorway to that.
All right. We have to take a break. We'll continue on the other side with my guest, Gene Malkovich.
Finding enemy and friend. mountain to longing door. We'll meet a way we can transcend. Down the mystic chord of memory, I read a page of timeless lines. A cry for peace and harmony, a wish for us to find our better angels. Terror and chaos is their want. Are they martyrs killing for a cause? Or is that murder blind to thought? Down the mystic yard of memory, I search a page of timeless lines.
Did you know the Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcasts right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith Shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. We are back, and Gene, when we cut away, there was a thought on my mind that I've got to ask you before we move too far away from where we started. We've established that there is a good body of evidence out there that indicates that the pyramids and the Sphinx, the whole Giza Plateau, predates the Egyptians by a long time. Who built the pyramids?
Well, the easier answer is Enoch built the pyramids. You know, the pillar, like you said, you mentioned the gentleman who wrote the book, The Pillars of Enoch.
That's correct.
And right, and so that's I've looked up Enoch, and I'm not thoroughly convinced, or I'm not done with my research enough to really say who built the pyramids, other than it must have been, to me, it seems like it would be the people that came to, the great teachers that came to us from Atlantis. And there's another, you know, there's a whole other, the Druids, this gentleman by the name of Michael Tessarian, uh-huh, believes that civilization was, even the pyramids were built by the Aryans. And he's taking it, you know, I love the guy and he's got some great work done and stuff like that, but I think he's taking it a little too far in that way. But he may be on the right track insofar as if you're an Atlantean Where was the first place you'd land if you were looking for land coming from Atlantic, saying it was in the Atlantic? Would it be Spain or North Africa or Ireland? That would be the first land that you would hit from Atlantis going eastward.
So yeah.
What I was told, because there is on every great monument, there's another monument built on top of it. On top of Stonehenge was Woodhenge, and on top of Woodhenge there was something else, a circle that was built there before. And it's said that on the pyramid, there's a pyramid underneath the pyramid.
Really?
Yeah, that mirrors it. You know, that's built, and it's built on a sacred site that was even older than that as well. And even in, and this goes on and on throughout history, the Church of St. Sophia in Constantinople, I don't know if you've been there, but it was built on a pagan site that predates, goes back to the Sumerian and ancient Persian times. So a lot of these, one of the most, just to mention real quick, on the other side of the world, this I found real fascinating. If you take a direct line through the pyramid and go right straight to the other side of the world, you know where you end up?
No.
Angkor Wat in Cambodia. And again, there's a lineup of the stars with the star system Draco, and I can't remember the other one, but Graham Hancock had been down there and had calculated that out. And not only that, not too far away from me going east, I live on the tip of the Bermuda Triangle. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you take a straight line from the Bermuda Triangle, you end up on the other side of the world at the Dragon Triangle. It's in the South Sea of Japan,
Where
they also found, in 150 feet of water, ancient structures. You ever seen the structures of in the Sea of Japan?
Yeah, you're talking about it starts with a Y. It's not Yamaguchi, but it's something like that.
Yamachi or something.
Yeah.
It was the. And I mean, I've seen them, the pictures of them, and there's no way that these things were not. You don't have perfect squares and 90 degree angles in nature. It just doesn't happen. So these things were previously built. And what I think Hancock presupposed was the fact that, again, these must have been built before the Great Ice Age hit, because at that time the water in the oceans would have been 400 feet less than where they are today. And it would have, that's why the accounts were what they covered them up. And there's other finds, too. Not too far out here off of Bimini is the Bimini Road. And I've talked to divers that have seen it and flown over it and have been there. I'm a little shy of flying out there because of this. being that I am on the tip of the Bermuda Triangle, and this is a different energy area here. You can feel it when you're here.
Well, also, off of the coast of Cuba was discovered underwater massive structures, and there is a pyramid structure. And made of white granite, and there was a great deal of a flurry of news about it when it was discovered, and then it all went quiet.
Well,
for years.
But there's pyramids. There's pyramids. They're discovering them all the time. There was one in Bosnia that I think that you know about. There was another one in Peru that was recently discovered, and. The pyramid is the kind of structure that stays forever. It's a natural geometric structure that a man would build. But only the Great Pyramid has that angle of 51-51-14, which is the one that brings in the energy. Like none of the other ones are built at the same angle. Now, you know where the... quite unusual indeed. You know where the largest pyramid in the world is?
China, isn't it?
No.
No?
East St. Louis, yeah.
It's the...
Pyramid
the
mound.
Uh-huh. Yeah, pyramid. The mound.
Right. I've been to that thing. It's again, you have... Anytime you're around these, like, sacred areas, there's definitely a different feel. You kind of wonder sometimes if you're still on the planet, or have you moved to another time zone, or there's something there, but you have to experience it for yourself.
We have 4 minutes until our top of the hour break, so let me pose a question, and you'll have, I hope, sufficient time to get into it. If not, we'll address it when we come back.
All right.
But this energy that you talk about at the Great Pyramid, what's the purpose of it drawing that energy in and then projecting it out into space, straight up into space? What is the purpose for that happening?
Well, I would say that there's a few purposes to it. One, it would be a signal that we're here. Another one would be that holding the, like I said before, it's helping to hold the planet and guide these energies where you need certain weights and certain formations in the right area so that the Earth stays together and the ley lines and the powers of that surround us all, that help our very existence maintain a certain function at a certain frequency. In other words, I believe that why do we have all these pyramids around the world? It's because they're being used as somewhat of a tuning fork to keep the energy and the ley lines and to keep us going in the right path.
So these pyramids, then, are sort of controlling the energies that it takes for the Earth to be the Earth we know.
Right. Not only just beacons, but also kind of like with magnets that are drawing. When you line a certain number of magnets together, you get certain lines of force. You know, like you've seen it on the, okay. So what they're doing is where they're making the force, that force energy throughout the entire world. We exist within a certain frequency.
Yeah.
Everything, like the Hindus say, that everything is a frequency, everything is a vibration. And what I've uncovered back in college is what is known to be today as the Schumann frequency, S-C-H-U-M-A-N, the Schumann resonance. And that what that has to do with is the energy level at the hertz at which we exist at. And back in 1968-69, we was at 7 hertz. And right now we're supposedly just above 12 hertz somewhere, which means that a 24-hour time period in 1968 would be 16 hours today because of this time compression as we move towards the center of our galaxy in 2012. So there is something else going on there.
That blows my mind, and we are going to have to talk about that when we come back,
okay.
Because that also coincides with, I will tell you that I am not a religious person, but I read a lot of religious texts, and that does coincide with something that is said in the book of Revelation, and I want to get your thoughts on that, but we...
I tried to read the book of Revelation, and I found it most befuddling. I couldn't understand it. I still can't understand it. It's very difficult.
We have to take a break. All right, we'll be back. All right, folks, a whole new world has just opened. We'll be back, and we'll open the phone lines for you in just a little bit. 1-800-289-1092 is the number to call. Toll-free throughout North America, and we shall return. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Boston Nights, guided by promotion. sound. Wait on A Street, we bang the drums. I made some friends for the future to come. Took a walk on the Freedom Trail. Saw the place where the Patriots fell. Walked through the Commons, sat down for a while. I saw some parents walking by with a child. Boston Nights, guided by potential lights. Boston Nights, and I'm high in the sky, but it feels so bright. Boston Nights, guided by potential lights. Boston Nights. Wonderland, had a look at the promised land. Drove up north where I spend the night. Breakfast at Thrift Food in the morning light.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back. Let me welcome those of you who are just now joining us in this second hour. Our guest this evening is Gene Malkovich. And we're talking about the mysteries of the pyramid. And there are many, 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 many mysteries about the Great Pyramid. We will open the telephone lines in just a moment. But let me say this again. For those of you in North America, that's the United States and Canada, there's a toll-free number for you. That toll-free number is 1-800-289-1092. All right? If you live outside of the United States, and I know we've got listeners scattered all over the world, got an email today from one in Japan that listens, but we have lots of listeners scattered around the world. If you're not in North America, you can still participate in the discussion by sending me an email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com with your question or your comment, and we'll ask Gene to respond to that. All right, now, Gene, when we went away, you were talking about time compression and that things have changed. Our 24-hour day is no longer the same amount of time that it was in the 60s. Is that right?
Correct. Correct. And, of course, we don't notice it because it's the old boiling frog thing. We're all moving along with it at the same rate. So we don't notice the time change from day to day. But over the period of time, this is a calculable thing. This is something that some mathematicians and physicists have worked out pretty well. And again, we are in a certain frequency that we exist at, and this is all dependent. This is on our on consciousness as well.
All right. Now, you said that our day now would be equal to 16 hours. Of what it would back in the 1960s.
Correct. And by the time we get to 2012, it'll be about 12 hours.
So did you know that that's a reduction of one-third?
Correct.
And I don't pretend to understand all of Revelation. I'm not I'm not an apocalyptic scholar. But I've read it, and there is something in there where it says the day will be shortened by one third.
Well, that you know, I that pretty much reaffirms what conclusions I've come to, and I've been studying a lot of the Mayan calendar and how it's interpreted, and as they change their days and their times, and they believe that everything is in a cycle. Now, they call us the fifth race of man. Did you know that the Pope, in his Christmas message, opens it up by saying, greetings to the fifth race of man?
Didn't know that.
So the Vatican is very, very aware of what's going on. And you've heard of the, in the Vatican, where they have the first thing that you do when you walk in on the floor, on the tile, is the entire astrological horoscope?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's go to the phone line, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
If you'd like to make a call.
Uh-huh. Don't do that to me, folks. All right, when I put you on hold, stay there. All right. 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. The telephone lines are now open, and if you've got a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you. The astrological signs being on the floor of the Vatican, yeah, I've heard about that. Interesting
right.
thing.
And
interesting thing.
The thing is that the three wise men had followed a star to the Star of Bethlehem to see where Jesus was born. So there's a bit of controversy that which star was that and how could that have happened, and a lot of astronomers have been thinking that it was a quasar or some kind of nova or something, and then there is others that believe that it was a UFO. And also when Moses was going through the desert, the cloud, the pillar of fire that led him through the desert, and some people say, well, this was the residence of God, or it could have been a UFO beaming up.
You know. All right,
one of the other things that I wanted to tell you about was the great work that Richard Hogan has done about the pyramids on Mars, and the similarity about the pyramids on Mars and their buildings, their angles, and the Cydonia, the city of Cydonia.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to look at that face on Mars and how much it looks like the face of the Sphinx. I mean, there's got to be something there. And what I believe happened at that time is that we're all part Martians. Because, you know where the planet, the asteroid belt is? I think that was the original planet where we developed in our solar system. And then somehow that was destroyed. And then they moved to Mars, and as Mars was either the planet went dry and lost its atmosphere, remember the Nephilim who came from the Earth, who instructed man to dig for gold to keep their atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know that story,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So look at Mars, look at the atmosphere. Yeah, I have friends that think that Nibiru is some giant planet out there somewhere that's coming to Earth and is going to perpetrate some great destruction and catastrophe that is going to turn the Earth into a ball of fire and destroy everything. And I'm going to go along with Richard Hogan, and he says Nibiru is Mars.
Hmm.
And I think he's right about that.
Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Michelle from Quebec.
Yes, Michelle.
What a great guess. I got 1,000 questions and 1,000 different subjects, but the one I want to go to is back to the pyramids. And do either of you think that if they put the cap back on, which was supposed to be gold or some other metal, and we know that a pyramid was made first to reflect, don't they think we got the technology now that we could get all kinds of readings and find something out about it? I think the idea we're going about it, trying to figure out what the old people did, and we should use the technology we got today to find out. But the cap's got to be put back on top.
What do you think about that, Gene?
Well, I'm not sure I heard the last part of that.
He said the cap has to be put back on top.
Oh, okay, okay. The capstone. The capstone.
Yeah.
Okay. With the capstone on, it forms another energy, which we're not ready for. And right now, the pyramid is actually a six-sided figure instead of a five-sided figure, and it's left open until the time that we're ready to receive that energy. Because it is a two-way communication. Like I said, I believe that it's a beacon as well as a monument.
Okay, Michelle, you have another question or comment?
Just a comment. I don't see where he or anybody else has the right to say we're not ready yet. I think we are ready. I think that's the problem. There's too many people saying you can't do it. And we all figured out we can't. I think we can. And like I said before, the technology we got now, we could find out a heck of a lot if we put our best minds and our best technology to finding out this stuff.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Well, you're welcome. Okay. I mean, as far as the technology thing goes, you know, I mean, Tesla had done some tremendous works, but how come no company has done anything about it? You know, there's a lot of technological advancements that are kept black or undercover.
Well, yeah, and I think there are a host of reasons for that, and one of them is you can't put a meter on free energy.
Right.
That's a big problem.
That's a big problem. And also, I believe that the American Space Program... Oh, by the way, my father worked on Echo 1, and that was one of my inspirations to go into science and to find out about UFOs and everything, because it was the first... right after Sputnik, it was the first thing that the United States had put up into space.
Mm-hmm.
So how that goes is the fact that again, back to the energy from the pyramid and where that all comes from and how we can make use of that is the same way that Tesla had found the secret and he had made use of it. And to think that the space program today, what we have up here at Cape Canaveral, that we're using 60-year-old World War II technology to launch a craft into space... That can't be the only thing that the government has. I know that there's some very, very smart scientists out there, and I know we've done a lot better than that, but it's, again, a black project.
All right, we have a flash message from Ireland, and Clinton says, is it just me, or does anybody think that the Sphinx was originally a lion, and maybe some egotistical Egyptian... a long time after carved his face on it. I make this strange statement because I heard that about 10,500 years ago, the Sphinx aligned with the constellation Leo, and Leo means lion. What he's asking you now, well, what do you think about that?
Well, that's exactly right. The Sphinx, about 10,000 years ago, I asked what it did line up with the constellation Leo, and the reason it looks a little bit different than it did, and actually Napoleon's soldiers, when Napoleon came down to Egypt, in their excitement, blown off the nose of the Sphinx. So it actually represents the man lion, the man lion.
Yeah. Okay.
It's about the great riddle of the Sphinx. You know.
Hmm. All right. Let's go back to the phone lines. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Yes, Brent.
You said 51, 51, 14 are the angles of the pyramid.
Correct.
What are the lengths? How is that arranged?
How is that arranged?
I mean, what bases and stuff like that?
Okay, if you take the base length of the pyramid and you take the height of the pyramid and you draw the line that goes along the I'm looking at it right now here at this map, the angle from the top part of the square. And according from the base, is 51 degrees, 0.14 degrees. Okay, is that anywhere what you wanted to know?
I want to know what the lengths of the sides are. If I was to build a miniature pyramid out of, say, balsa wood, what would the lengths be?
Oh, well, let me see. The lengths would be almost equal, and you would have to, you know, cut your length if, you know, whether you want to build a 6-foot one or a 12-foot one or a 100-foot one, it really wouldn't matter as long as you have the angles at the end at the right point.
Okay.
Thank you for the call, Brent. 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. Toll free throughout North America. Now, I got to ask a couple of questions that may be outside of what you have researched. But, you know, from Egypt, we have seen some rather amazing things. We've seen carvings from Abydos that look very much like a helicopter, a jet airplane, a UFO. We've seen carvings that look like electronic devices. What do you think those are? And let me say to our caller that I just put on hold, hang in there, I'll get to you. What do you think about that?
Well, I think, you know, whether it's the Egyptians or the Hopi Indians or whatever culture you have, I think when man recreates a symbol, he's doing the best that he can to put forth what he had seen. So if these highly advanced technological aircraft or machines were available or were seen at that time, then somebody would have drawn them. You find the similar drawings in the Vedas and talks about the chariots in space where they have the wars. Well, I mean, you read the Vedas and you think you're watching the movie Star Wars.
All right, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, yes, this is Kevin. I'm from Iroquois Falls, Ontario. How are you doing there, Kevin?
Outstanding. Outstanding. Thanks for asking. What's on your mind?
Yes, I heard Gene here mention about the pyramids predicting future events, correct?
Uh-huh. Right.
Yes, and I want to know, what have they predicted already, stuff that big events that have happened in the past, and what do they predict for 2012?
Okay. The major events predicted in the past were World War I and World War II. And the other major event in the timeline of the pyramid before that was the birth of Christ, where they actually have what they call the Christ Triangle, which is 33 pyramid inches long, representing the life of Christ. And again, what we're looking at in the future, well, right now, I believe that we're in that period of time where time is no longer ascending, but going along parallel to the earth, as in the pyramid, for a certain period, which the days could become months, the months could become years, where time becomes compressed. And then as we approach 2012 or 2016 or whatever the exact time is, which we really have difficult to figure out, we reach the level where we have a 1,000-year millennium of peace and spiritual growth.
So there's nothing that connects it with the Mayan calendar, right?
It's amazing how close they are with the Mayan calendar, that this period of time, it's not the inches. Once the timeline goes sideways, the inches aren't no longer years.
Okay.
So that's because of this time compression that's going on right now. So and so it's very, very difficult to predict along how long is this time going to be. But when it's over with, whether it's 2016 or 2020 or 2037, wherever it is, somewhere along that area, the second coming refers to our 1,000 years of spiritual growth, where we have peace and prosperity.
All right, thank you very much, and peace and light to you both.
All right, thanks for the call, Kevin. 1-800-289-1092, if you're in North America, that is toll-free. If you're outside of North America, You can send me a flash message. Send it to, just send an email with your question or comment to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. All right, let's talk about that technology again just for a moment. You said they are depicting things they have seen.
Correct.
And I have contended that that is the case. And I use this as an example. And Gene, do you have a pencil handy or a pen?
Let me see. One second here.
An audience.
I'm a writer.
Don't worry about it. Let me ask the audience if you have a pen or pencil handy. I've done this experiment before. Get a piece of paper.
Sure.
Get a blank piece of paper and your pen or pencil. And you don't have to be a good artist. Just your sketch. I want you to draw me a guapple.
Pardon?
Draw a picture of a guapple.
I don't think I know what that is.
Yeah, that's the point. You can't draw pictures of what you haven't seen.
Correct.
Even if your picture goes into what we would call science fiction, it's based on structures or shapes of animals that you have seen. So if you draw an alien that has squid features, well, hey, you've seen a squid.
Please.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can't draw pictures of what you have not seen. You cannot imagine what does not exist. I don't think these people were able to draw something that they had not seen. I think they saw it. Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Trey in Atlanta.
Hello, Trey.
Hey, listen, about that, what you just mentioned about people not being able to make these things up, you know, we look at all the old drawings and stuff, and you know, you see some of the things that were drawn, you know, you kind of tend to realize they're real. First, I wanted to mention that y'all were talking about the space program, and it is amazing that you can sit here nowadays, and I can watch a sumo tournament from Japan, and at the same time, I could be in a chat room talking to some guy in Mongolia in about 2 seconds, but they're still flying a Plymouth Duster up there in space.
Right. There's a whole underground project that the government's doing. Like, I've heard that we're mining helium-3 on the dark side of the moon. Have you heard that story, Kevin?
Yeah. We hear everything you can imagine,
right.
We hear on this show. You know, that falls into the classification of, could be.
There's some, I've met some remote viewer types that said that they've seen it. And I've also met some people that have said that they've been taken on board a UFO and shown it.
We have had guests on this show who tell us that they are in a position to know, and they say that, yes, that's the truth.
Yeah.
I've not been there. I haven't seen it, so I don't know, but I know what we hear. Let me check something very quickly here. Okay, I think we've got time. Trey, did you have another question or comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, this is somebody who is maybe might have heard of this this documentary that I recorded. It was Roger Moore hosting it, and it was a couple of different parts. One of them was the Tomb of the Visitor God, and this is over in Egypt, and there was another one where these Russian scientists they weren't scientists, they're all professionals, and they disappeared over, it was either in Egypt or Saudi Arabia, and they were all gone over there, and they'd all disappeared, and no one knew where they went, but it turns out that they'd gone over there, and supposedly they had a video, and it actually showed them there, and they gathered this site, and it was some kind of burial place. It has something to do with pyramids, and actually, it's actually a video of them disappearing. And you see the people standing there, all these people standing around there in their clothes, and all of a sudden a flash of light happens, and then the camera just drops. And that's it. Have you seen that documentary with Roger Moore hosting it?
No, I haven't. But are you talking something to like teleportation?
These people went there specifically to be abducted. Like they knew they were supposed to be there, And this is actually a documentary. It's got a doctor to host it, and one of the daughter of the two of the one of the couples that disappeared is actually seeing this footage for the first time. You see, she's in tears. She's going, "Oh, mother and father," and this is another Russian leaked video, along with the Tomb of the Visitor God video, which shows them opening up this tomb, and this gas comes out of the tomb, and you see the guy kind of stagger back towards the wall as if he's kind of, you know, getting kind of messed up from whatever's coming out of this tomb. But that was, these were all, one. It is something that sounded like you might be interested in, because I love Coral Castle. And I got a million questions about that. I know you don't have time. but I was, because this is, I haven't found anybody, and I've got it sitting right here. I recorded it off the Science Fiction Channel, and Roger Moore hosted it. And I think if you look it up on Netflix, type in Roger Moore on Netflix, or UFO documentaries and Roger Moore, you might be able to find out what I'm talking about. But it's got two different tapes that were both leaked. And this is not the one of the downed saucer, the Russian downed saucer.
Right, right. That is the one I've seen before. It was the Russian Roswell, where the Soviet Army surrounds a captured UFO or a crashed UFO. That's the other one?
Yeah, I think that's what he's referring to. Trey, I want to thank you for the call. And I'm glad that you are able to listen to us live again.
Thanks, sir.
All right. All right, folks, the telephone number is 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. That's toll-free throughout North America. And if you're outside of North America, you can send your question or comment via email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. Gene, I got asked in an email one time, who is Flash?
Flash and, Gordon.
Yeah, and I'm not making fun of that question other than to say Flash is nobody. Flash is simple. We call it that simply because when your message arrives, I have a little indicator that starts flashing on my screen. So that tells me that you have sent me a Flash message, all right? So that's what that's about. All right, the Egyptian pyramids at Giza, do they predate the pyramids that dot Egypt that we know for sure were built by Egyptians?
Well, what I believe that the Great Pyramids and the Pyramids of Giza were the original models. And every pharaoh that came afterwards, in order to retell the story of his rightful place on earth, that he is the God-man, he is Ra become man. As you know, in Egyptian culture, the pharaoh was
a god,
the god-king. Mm-hmm. He was direct descendant from the god Ra that brought forth life to all of humanity.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back with more from Gene in just a few minutes.
So how do you know where to go? I don't know. trouble's always easy to find. Before you know it, you're in trouble all the time. Well, God loves all of his children, even if you're not one in a million. I know you're not a little kid anymore, but keep the faith because you're almost ready for the long walk back to the beat of a new tune. But don't hold back if you're thinking it's too soon. Your bags are packed, so act like you know.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
All right. We are back, and my guest this evening is Gene Malkovich. Gene, I got to ask you a question.
Yes.
About my pronunciation. Am I saying your last name correctly?
That's pretty good. It's
how Malkovich. Do you say it? Malkovich?
Malkovich, yeah.
Okay.
That's not an easy name to hang with.
All right, and now let me tell you this, and then we'll get back to Egypt. I was in a bar in Belgrade.
Mm-hmm.
This was just before NATO bombed Yugoslavia. And I was speaking in Serbian, which I began learning it in Bosnia, and then had learned more in Kosovo. And so anyway, I was speaking with the bartender, and we were just joking and talking. And this guy walks in off the street, and he stands and looks at me for a minute. And I thought, oh, my, no. This is not good. And because I'm an American, and I mean, you can't hide that, and I don't try. And so he stands and looks for a minute, and then he walks over to me, and he pulls his hand up with his fingers like a gun, you know? You know how you point your finger and make it
right.
Make it look? He pulls it out and says, Texas, yes? I said,
da.
Right, and I asked him how he knew, and he was a petroleum engineer and had worked in Houston for a number of years, and apparently he thought I was speaking Serbian with a Texas accent.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
I'm told that I speak Russian with a Polish accent.
Well, you know, I can't hear the accents except in English. In English, I hear different accents, but... if I hear Serbian, it just sounds Serbian to me. If I hear Russian, it just sounds Russian. All right, back to the pyramids. And a flash message from Australia. Phil wants to know this. He says, regardless of when the Sphinx and pyramids were they built only with technology available at that point in history?
Okay, great question. Great question. Okay, this is going to the visionary thing. When I meditated, the vision that I got of how the pyramids were built was that the high priests had taken ribbons and wrapped it around the bricks, and then they played the sacred music, which made them go right into place. It was, and this is a very similar where Graham Hancock said the answer to the riddle of how the pyramid was built was lies in Easter Island. And the Easter Island story has a much, very similar story, that the high priests that carved the Easter Island statues had played the sacred music, and the statues actually danced into position.
Well, that would not be out of step with Coral Castle.
Correct. It's not the technology. We keep thinking of things in Western terms and the technology and surroundings and environments that we have. Everything is some, you know, computerized and mounted. You know, this temperature and that temperature and all these sort of things. The technology that the ancients were using was very much different. Like in Atlantis, the technology that they had developed was based on light, whereas ours is based on electricity. And being that we are solid light, we are beings of light. Everything is a frequency of light. The Atlanteans were far more advanced than we were in their kind of physics, because they started off from a different spot than we did.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Caller is not available. All right, 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. The telephone lines are open. Do you think that the pyramids, particularly the Great Pyramid, really plays, I mean, in reality, does it play an essential role in our Earth today?
Well, it gives us the timeline of the ascent of man. That's an important fact. It also, you know, like I said, it also acts as a centering device for the energy around the Earth to make sure that it's tuned to the proper frequency so that we can exist and continue on. And that's been done on a permanent basis. The builders of the pyramid built that knowing that this is what needs to be done at that point in time to secure the fact that of our existence and our growth.
All right, let's try the phone line again. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Aha. We are having difficulties getting people to have the courage to speak. All right. Look, you talk to your mom, right? Just imagine I'm your mom. 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092, that is the toll-free number to call, and that will make it possible for you to make your comments or ask your questions of Gene, and I will say it with my Serbo-Texan accent, Malkovich.
I like that.
Serbo-Texan, yeah.
I'll remember that one. That's a good one.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Ray in Dallas.
Yes, Ray.
Yes, I have a question for Gene.
Uh-huh, go ahead.
All right. Do you think that there was any other apparatus inside of the pyramid that may have allowed it to function at the time when it was built? You know, other devices that are no longer there.
Right. Okay. The devices are still there. They're just, we have lost the knowledge on how to use them. One of the things that the pyramid was able to do was to act as an observatory to so that we could observe stars in real time. That is not the time that it takes for the star's light to reach us, the light years that it takes to reach us, but it, you were able to use the pyramids, and again, by playing the high priest by saying the sacred music, different tunes would create different functions in the pyramid, one of which is also the observatory, as well as an initiation into the higher order.
And do you think that the sarcophagus, the so-called sarcophagus, had anything to do with any of this?
Right, the sarcophagus does have something to do with that. That's where the initiate would lie in the sarcophagus. They would the priest, the high priest, would stand around, and they would chant and play the music, and the room would fill with light, and the individual would rise to the next state, the next level, the higher state.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, Ray, thank you. Again, the telephone number 1-800-289-1092. That is toll-free throughout North America. So if you have a question or a comment, that's the number to call. Or if you're outside of North America, send me a Flash message. Just send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. One of the things that is pretty interesting in some of the carvings are, you can find them all over the internet now, but there's a carving from a temple. I forget where it does. I know it starts with a D.
Okay.
But anyway, it shows what appears to be perhaps an electrical light. Do you think they had such technology?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that one is, I think you're mentioning something in the, again, it was found in the pyramids where they had that, where they made a light bulb.
Yeah.
And, okay, and so they were able to somehow, through some chemical bath and a cathode filament, able to light that. Yeah, I've seen that. And perhaps that was done by the workers and stuff like that. But then again, the main thing is, it's not just the energy that we know of as electricity or nuclear physics as we understand it today. This is a whole other kind of energy, the kind of stuff that Tesla was working on, the kind of stuff that Edley Scallion knew about. And,
so, but what you're saying is that they knew about it then.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, I don't know if you've heard of this, there's a coal mine in California that they found something that looked like a battery, like a D-cell battery with a carbon rod surrounded by chemicals.
Yeah.
That they dated back to, you know, it has to go back millions of years.
Yeah.
So I believe that, you know, the Earth has gone through, you know, we're the fifth race that we have developed and left remnants of our development over certain periods of time. The battery is one of them. The pictures are the other one. There's a in South Africa. They discovered something that they think may have been a nuclear reactor in some one of the diamond mines there.
Now that's interesting. All
yeah.
Right, caller. Let me ask you a question. We're about to go to break. Are you willing to hang on through the break?
Sure.
All right, hang on. You'll be on hold. You won't hear anything, but don't go away. All right, we have a break coming up here in about 20 seconds. And we have a flash message from Italy. And so when we come back from the break, we'll take our caller first, and then we'll get to the flash message. And we will continue with our discussion with Gene Malkovich about the Great Pyramid. We'll be back.
We'll be right back.
get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back. We are talking with Gene Malkovich, and we're talking about the secrets of the Great Pyramid. Gene, let's go straight to the phone. And caller, are you still with me?
Yes.
All right. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Don calling from Phoenix.
Yes, Don.
How are you doing tonight?
Outstanding, sir.
Hi, Gene. Did I understand you correctly earlier when you were saying that our time frame is shorter comparison now than what it was in the 1960s, where a 24-hour day now is only, I think you were saying 16 hours?
Right, right. As we as we approach the 2012 center of our galaxy, the what's called the Schumann resonance increases in hertz. This is the area where we exist at. This is the energy level, the frequency at which allows us to exist. And we don't notice this time shift because of the boiling frog sort of thing. You throw a frog into cold water, and as you warm it up, he won't jump out. But if you throw him into hot water, he jumps right out. So as this time, we're so accustomed to it, the day-to-day changes are unnoticeable. Yet, this is a scientific reality that is calculable. And there have been many physicists and other scientists who have calculated, and it's known as the Schumann resonance, S-C-H-U-M-A-N.
Well, could that be, as we get older, time seems to really fly by for us. Now, could that be from a result of that? Could that be literal instead of imaginary?
And well, some people feel it more than others. It all depends on how psychically attuned you are, because all these changes that are coming up, they don't happen all at once. They kind of come in waves. Everything is everything in the universe is somewhat cyclical, and it comes on a little by little as it floats. There's ebbs and tides, just as the moon turns around us and influences us also by the tides that come in and out every day.
Well, I have noticed that myself, and it seems like everybody I've ever talked to, and as we get older, I'm in my 50s, and we kind of look back and we say, God, where did it all go to, you know, and everybody
right.
says that, and it seems like the older we get, the faster time goes, and you're saying this is a literal thing instead of an imaginary
correct.
Thing, and that
correct.
That is why somebody who is very young would not notice the time shift as much because they haven't lived enough time to notice the shortening of time.
Again, yes. If you're spiritually in tune or a little bit psychic, you will be able to detect that time shift just a little bit more.
Yes, I am.
That way you go. I notice that every week I seem to do the same sort of thing, and I'm going, my God, this week has gone by just a little bit faster than last week, and I go to the same place for dinner and stuff, and all of a sudden dinner is over with. Just my goodness, it's the hour has just flown right by. So, yeah, there is something psychological about how we perceive time.
Yeah. Okay, Don, thank you for the call, and we have to get to the flash message that I promised from Italy. From Italy, Angelo writes this. He says, I have also read where the Sphinx is actually a composite of the zodiac. Virgo is the head, Leo the tail, etc., demonstrating perhaps yet another function of the structure assigned to simply look up from age to age. What do you think?
Well, that is exactly it. That it was pointed towards a Leo constellation, and the ancients didn't do anything without a purpose to it. And the purpose was, of the Sphinx at that time was to delineate and to, for posterity and future generations, to remind us that this age had occurred and it was for us to figure out what was it was all about.
All right, here is one from Australia. This is from Andrew. And he says, what do you think Father Malachi Martin knew? It appears to be linked to many things. It's supposed to be big, whatever it is.
Well, I think Father Malachi, I've heard him. I have some of his tapes. And he definitely, I think he knew a little bit more than he was willing to say. I think he was holding back on a lot of things, and just as the I was discussing the prophecies of Fatima, and my friend had mentioned that the third prophecy had never been mentioned because it would scare the living daylights out of you if you knew what was really coming up. And what could, you know, what could the, you know, could be worse than war and famine and the things that we have going on even today? If you really look around you, what do we got going? You know, there's a lot of things that need to be corrected, and we need to be, you know, go on the right path, and we will get there. You know, it's just a matter of time and how we decide to do it.
Do you think we will ever reach a point on this planet, and we're almost out of time, but a point on this planet where people do not wish to kill you if you draw a cartoon?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. According to Nostradamus, what will happen here after the 1,000 years of peace and tranquility and spiritual development, we will continue to develop and go further, and all of us will get one day get to the point where we'll no longer need to reincarnate and come back to the suffering of Earth and go back home, and that is our spiritual home.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, we've talked about a lot of stuff here tonight, and a lot of it is new information to me. Some of it is information that I have heard, but with a little bit different perspective on it. But it's been very, very informative and very interesting. I did not know, Gene, about the timeline inside the pyramid. Tonight is the first time I heard about it.
What I really want to tell all of our listeners is that 2012 is not going to be the catastrophe, the doom that everybody is worried about. Many people, as soon as they hear 2012, they think, oh, this is the end of time, the end of the world, everything's going to collapse, and it's all over for us. Quite the contrary. It's the end of a certain time, just as Sagittarius goes into Capricorn, and Leo goes into Virgo. It's the end of one time and the beginning of another. It's the end of the fifth race of man, but even in the Mayans mention it, that the sixth race is starting up right afterwards. So there's really nothing, nobody should be scared of the future, and we're all headed in the right direction.
So you don't think that all of the survivalist mentality for 2012 is something we really need to get into? We just need to plan for December the 22nd, 2012.
Right. I think, you know, I mean, the economy here, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why we should be prepared for whatever disaster. Here in Florida, we have tornadoes. So people know that we have tornadoes, so you have water, you have the essentials that you need. But to take it over to the point where you're building whole cities underground and thinking that you're going to survive the Holocaust, that I think these people are gone, taking the message in the wrong way.
Thank you for being with us, Gene, and I hope you'll come back and talk with us again.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure talking with you, and I wish my friends all the best.
If you will, just stay on the line with me. I'm going to put you on hold, and I'd like to talk with you a moment after the show. All right, folks. Well, you know, that's some encouraging information, isn't it? You've heard me say that my plans for December the 21st, 2012, are not like terminal plans, because on December the 22nd, I plan to go Christmas shopping. And I could be wrong. If I am, I'll be taken out by the same wave as everybody else. But I don't think I'm wrong. I think Gene is not wrong. I think things are going to be okay. All right. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be back tomorrow night. My guest tomorrow night will be talking about a specific remote viewing project that I asked him to engage in. You will be fascinated. We'll be back tomorrow night, same time. Until then, so long, everybody.